Hello and welcome to Preparing Foster Youth for Adulting, the podcast designed to highlight strategies and resources that help youth in care transition to adulthood successfully. Our guest today is Mark Meekum. Mark is the CEO of Ohio Children's Alliance, a nonprofit that supports foster youth and those aging out of foster care in Columbus, Ohio. Welcome, Mark. Thank you so much for participating in our podcast series. How are you today?
Great. And how are you?
Oh, I am also well. Thank you very much. I'm sitting here in central Pennsylvania and it is a little rainy. You're not too far away though. You're in Ohio.
Yep. A little rainy here today too, but better than the normal April.
Yes, exactly. We could have snow, so I'm not complaining.
Right.
First of all, before we dive into any of the interviewing questions, I just want to point out that your organization, Ohio Children's Alliance, was actually one of our award winners last year. So congratulations for that.
Thank you. We really appreciate the recognition and support.
Oh, you're very welcome. For those who are listening, the organization that Mark runs there as CEO, they won the Youth Impact category in our awards program last year. And that really zeroes in on one, are they having a positive effect? And two, the process in which they go through to capture the data to be able to demonstrate that you're having that impact. So that was a wonderful thing that this peer-judged awards program was able to do, was identify your organization, at least among the applications from last year, actually had the best application. And they wanted to recognize you for the great work you're doing there.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Mark. So what I'd like to do is to talk about you, if you don't mind, talk about you first. I'm always interested in finding out from our interviewees the path that you've taken to get you where you are in this organization, working with youth in foster care and aging out of foster care. And so I want to give you a little time to share that. What was your journey?
I've actually found that a lot of my peers, something part of everyone's journey, it seems like, is some kind of connection, some kind of passion for child and family services. And that certainly is part of my story too. I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I grew up in a family that was impacted by the foster care system. I myself did not grow up in foster care, but both of my grandfathers coincidentally did. Both were orphans, one in North Carolina and one in Cincinnati. And both grew up in orphanages and foster homes, and later in their life, aged out of foster care and built their own families. And this new type of, you know, buy-in with their families has cascaded down to their children, including my mom and my dad. So my dad actually was the leader of a Cincinnati-based community organization that provided foster care and independent living services. And he had that role for 4 decades and retired about 5 years ago. And my mom was a social worker for most of her career at a hospital, working mostly with young mothers and expectant mothers, most of whom were in poverty. So I grew up learning about what it was like being an orphan from my grandfathers. I grew up as a son of a leader of a foster care agency and a son of a mom who worked directly with young people. And it really did have an effect on me. When I pursued college, I studied political science. And after graduate school, I went to, you know, find my first job after college. And I don't know if this was destiny or not, but I found an opportunity at the Ohio Children's Alliance for an entry-level public policy associate role, which kind of braided my interest in public policy. That's what I studied in college, with this passion that I've always had around empowering kids and families. That was certainly part of my upbringing. So I have actually been employed at the Ohio Children's Alliance now for the past 17 consecutive years, and the last 12 as their CEO.
So in 5 years, 5 years you went from entry level to CEO?
Yes, it was... I was 29 when I became CEO, and I didn't know how to read financial statements. I wasn't sure, you know, how to deposit a check, but I had awesome staff around me, an awesome board of directors, and I quickly figured it out.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, congratulations on that. It's obviously a testament to, I'm going to guess, the passion you have for the mission and the energy that you have behind making it all work.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. So it's almost being born into the family like that. I don't want to say that in and of itself is destiny. But I think what we have around us growing up does shape who we are, of course, and our values. And it just seems like this path is, it's not surprising given your early years.
Yeah, it's not. I've reflected a lot on it. And there's a lot of things that I've learned through all my families, siblings, parents, grandparents, and others that really believes that we should have faith in people and not to give up on people. And that it's really important to empower people to the best as we can for them to achieve their goals.
Mm-hmm. It does make me think about the young people in foster care who don't have that opportunity to have a family, a positive family influence with careers and values and decisions. And in fact, end up in the foster care system, often bouncing from home to home, from foster parents to foster parents, or even group homes. And so where does that leave them when they're trying to shape who they are? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, being a young person involved in child protection and placed in a foster care, it's an absolutely terrible experience. I mean, regardless of how good our government does in designing our system, regardless of how good community-based organizations do, the system experience in and of itself is traumatizing. And we need to do everything we can to prevent children from needing to be served by the foster care system in the first place.
So it sounds like you have a passion around prevention.
Absolutely. And that is really what led to the formation of the Ohio Children's Alliance.
Okay.
We were founded 5 decades ago by a group of community agencies that mostly managed former orphanages. They want to have a greater voice in how the system was designed so that there could be more upstream opportunities to work with families. So that is kind of how the Ohio Children's Alliance works, is we are a statewide network of community agencies, but also foundations. We collaborate with local and state government, and most importantly, foster youth and alumni. So together, we're collaborating to advance Ohio's system of care and finding many opportunities through advocacy, program development, fundraising, to improve outcomes for youth and families.
Is there any policy, law, change in the system that you can point to that your organization has had an impact on in Ohio?
The public policy issue that we are most proud of changing, contributing to the change in Ohio, is the development of Ohio's extended foster care program. The way that this whole program works through our federal and state governments is kind of bizarre. But around 2009, Congress enabled states to create new programs to extend support to foster youth who age out at 18, but it was optional. And for many years, I saw California, Illinois, all these other states take steps to extend care to 21, and Ohio never did. So we created a coalition of foster youth advocates, including the youth themselves, and we created a goal of changing the law in Ohio to make it a requirement that we extend care to 21. And that program, first of all, that bill passed into law, took a couple years. It was signed by then Governor John Kasich. And now it is called the Bridges Program. And we're really proud of all the work that we did in partnership with youth and alumni and advocates to create this program.
That's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you. So we're really proud of what has become Bridges today. And our state government actually sought a partner to administer the program with them. And we decided as the Ohio Children's Alliance to create a provider network and bid on the program. So that was over 6 years ago, and we won the bid, and 6 years passed, we won it again. So we administer the Bridges program across the entire state to around 700 young people every day. We've served over 2,000 since the program's inception. And we continue to grow it, and we continue to gauge feedback from young people, focus groups, and surveys. and we continually improve the program, and we're really proud of the success of the program and of all the success that these young people have achieved.
You should be. That's wonderful. And, you know, I do have a question about that. I know extended foster care, typically what that looks like is that you offer as an option to young people coming out of foster care that they can stay in the foster care system and continue getting the supports with the caveat that they are pursuing education or have a job, you know, something along those lines. What does it look like in Ohio?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is how Congress originally created this program, which is funded through Title 4E of the Social Security Act. And I think it was a great bill. It was a great thought, and it was flawed. I really don't think states should extend foster care for youth into adulthood. I think they should create new opportunities that are youth-driven, that are individualized, that empower them to achieve their goals in adulthood. And that's really how the Bridges program was designed. Those were the principles behind it. We didn't want to extend foster care as we know it. We wanted to create something new and different with a new name, a new brand, something where youth have to find out about it, buy into it, and actually apply for it. And it's not perfect. You know, we've had some challenges and we are, again, continually improving. But today, our program is really phenomenal and I'm proud of it. And it's something that we encourage other states to think about instead of just extending the system, but creating new opportunities for young people to benefit.
Well, you know what? I agree. I think it's a unique time in life. And so they need a unique bridge, to use the name of your program. They need an opportunity, a time to find out what it is they want to do, to be able to identify their goals and work toward their goals to adulthood, and whether it's employment, housing, all of the above, wellness, what have you. And I agree with you. I don't know that I've thought about it from quite that perspective, that it shouldn't just be foster care extended. Okay, you're still in foster care. You just now have to work or be getting, you know, in education, some kind of college degree or trades or so forth. So yeah, I agree with you completely.
What's interesting is we have conducted focus groups of hundreds of these young people enrolled in Ohio's Bridges program and surveyed even, you know, over 1,000. And one of the most common themes that we hear is they don't want to deal with the foster care system anymore. They don't want to feel like they're in foster care. They don't want to feel like government is their parent and there's all these restrictions and red tape. They don't want to feel like welfare recipients. They just want to be empowered to help them figure out what their goals are and to be there with them while they pursue those goals.
Yeah. You know, you're leading into a question that I already had written down here, and that is, how do you convince the young people to apply when they have that mindset? If they're thinking, oh, this is just another government foster care program, they wouldn't necessarily want to continue participating. So how do you encourage and convince young people that it's a really great thing for them to apply to this?
Great question. And I'll be honest, we don't do an excellent job at it quite yet in Ohio, but we're getting better. What's difficult is that our program exists after foster care. So young people while in foster care need to learn about the program from their foster parent, from their caseworker, and eventually get linked up with us. And it's really hard to control the messaging, to ensure that messaging happens in the right way at the right time. So what we find is that because we're a voluntary state, youth have to age out and then choose to be in our program, that we're only serving about 1 in 4. And we're missing opportunities to be there for so many of these young people who may not truly understand what Bridges is yet because it wasn't communicated to them in the right way. So we're partnering with our state government to identify ways to improve that. We definitely want to get away from insinuating that Bridges is more foster care. And we also are exploring ways where they can, I hate to use the word bridge so many times, but that they could have a like automatic bridge into the program for a short period of time without taking action so that they can learn about it hands-on, you know, without just learning about it through writing and deciding if they're going to apply, but have someone reach out to them before they age out, after they age out, and that is bridges. And then they can make a decision after they're already in the program if this is something that they want to continue.
Yeah, that's great. Do you allow young people to like step away and come back? Because sometimes that happens in programs. Young people are anxious and antsy to try something on their own, and then they realize, oh, I wasn't quite ready.
Yes, that was a priority of the lawmakers in Ohio who established Bridges. They wanted to ensure that if you didn't enroll immediately, that's okay. And if you want to disenroll and change your mind down the road and re-enroll, that's okay too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there a limit to the number of young people who can participate in this in a, say, a year's time?
There is not a limit.
Okay.
You know, we are hopeful that if we can achieve some changes in how we manage eligibility in the application process, that we can serve, you know, maybe upwards of 3 out of 4 young people on any given day.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to ask you about Bridges. I want to wrap back around to Ohio Children's Alliance too, but since we're talking about Bridges, what kinds of services do young people have available to them or programs under Bridges?
Sure. While enrolled in Bridges, every youth is assigned a liaison. And this liaison works directly with them face-to-face every month and assists them on developing their life goals. The liaison also has access to funding for the young people, which is individualized, and it aligns with what their goals are. So we have enough funding to cover their housing and what we call room and board, like groceries and utility bills. And we help them figure out what kind of job are they looking for and how do you go apply for it? What kind of college are you interested in and how do you apply for it? So we really focus on empowering the young person through case management. And we don't make decisions for them. We help equip them to make the right decision. But then at the same time, we do have this available funding for each young person to cover those essential housing and room and board types of costs each month.
Okay. Do you have a physical location? Do you provide housing for them? Or do you work with partners then to, if they need transitional living situations?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have community, about 20 community organizations across Ohio that we partner with that employ these liaisons working directly with the youth. And together, we have cultivated many different types of housing options for young people. So we don't own any buildings. We don't rent any buildings directly. But we have cultivated relationships with landlords, with community housing authorities, with universities in terms of like dorms. We've also cultivated a network of host homes, which is interesting. Some people are actually interested in telling us, you know, that they may have an aunt or uncle or a kin who said that they can move in with them. And we consider that housing too. And we also have recruited some former foster parents and others in the community who want to open their home to a young people in the Bridges program as a host home. So that's an option as well.
Do they have to go through like the full background checks and so forth since the young people are over 18?
There are different protocols that we put in place for host homes to ensure that, you know, that we're making good, responsible matches for them.
Sure, sure. I know host homes, the concept has come up a few times in different interviews, but I don't see a significant trend nationwide, but I think it's just being tried in pockets here and there. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, we think it is a great idea for many young people. And what we really believe in is that young people should have options. And having host homes as an option is important, as long as they're fully aware of what all of their options are.
Mm-hmm. Right, I agree. So why do you use the title liaison? A lot of organizations will use mentor or coach. I'm curious because words have meanings to organizations, and I'm just wondering what the thinking was behind liaison.
Yeah. Well, first, our state government, the Ohio Department of Children and Youth, determined that word from the onset. But their rationale, as we understand it, is they wanted a term different from caseworker or case manager. They didn't want it to seem like a child welfare role, which is really important.
So whether it's coach, mentor, liaison,
I think those types of terms really resonate with young people after they age out of foster care.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, I want to get back to Ohio Children's Alliance so that I can better understand how Bridges fits into it. So what is the overarching structure of Ohio Children's Alliance? I'll just leave it at that. I'll let you explain.
Sure. So we are a not-for-profit organization based in Columbus, Ohio, but our mission is statewide. And our mission is really focused on improving the system of care for kids and families. So we were originally founded as an organization that pursued that mission through advocacy. But through time, especially in the past 10 years, we've developed a new path of achieving that mission, which is development of programs. Because what we've determined is that there are really challenging gaps in Ohio's system of care. And working together with funders and regulators and community agencies, we can fill those gaps by creating new programs. So Bridges is one example of a program that we helped create with state government and now run. But we also have created another example is a behavioral health respite program. A lot of kids and families struggle. Some of them have contact with the child welfare system. And one of the first things that they say that they really need is a break. So we've created a respite program that matches families that are kind of facing crises with an opportunity for respite workers to come into their home or their kids to go in someone else's supervised home for like a weekend. So it's those types of new programs that we do at the Ohio Children's Alliance in addition to advocacy as part of our strategy of improving Ohio's system of care.
Oh, wow. That's great. How young? When you're thinking about serving families, how young would the children be? Babies, infants, school age?
So our organization really focuses in general on the 0 to 21 age group. That behavioral health respite program specifically typically serves kids that are like middle school on up. And of course, Bridges is for young adults age 18 through their 21st birthday.
Right. And how many staff do you have in your organization?
So the Ohio Children's Alliance has about 45 total staff members. But our Bridges program, we administer through contracts with other community-based organizations. So collectively, we have about 250 staff running that whole program statewide, either employed by us or contracted through us.
How do you ensure consistency in the application of the program?
Consistency is really important, and that is one of the top priorities of our state government to ensure that all young people have consistent opportunities in Bridges, and it doesn't vary city by city or county by county. So we administer the program statewide. We have statewide rules, statewide standards, a training program for staff that applies to everyone regardless of where they live. We administer the program with different regional managers who all collaborate together and report to the same person. So it is a statewide program. There are differences in community resources, but our program itself is very standardized so that we ensure that every young person has equal opportunities.
I think you may have said this, but I'll ask again. How many young people participate in Bridges, say, in a year typically?
On any given month, there is roughly 700 young people enrolled. So over the course of a year, it's about 1,000 different unique young people.
Mm-hmm. My first reaction is to be impressed that you serve so many, but then I pause and I'm sad that there are that many young people aging out that you have to serve.
It is kind of depressing, and we are equally as passionate about preventing kids and families from being involved in the child protection system as we are about empowering those who are involved and who actually aged out of the system. So just about all young people who age out, that's a failure of our system. We didn't do our jobs well enough, but we need to empower all those young people and believe in them because they have developed so much resiliency through their experiences in foster care. And many of them are our state's and our country's next leaders too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I know the pendulum swings in the country insofar as how foster care, how quickly we'll say they will pull young people out of a home. right? And so it kind of goes back and forth from let's take them out as soon as possible for as many crises as possible. And then there's the other side, which is we're going to work with the families, keep them in the families as long as we can, right? Where do you see things right now as far as that balance? And where do you think it should be?
That's a great question. And it is such a challenging.
Yeah.
It's such a challenge for leaders of public child protective services. It feels like they can never get it right. They either go too far left or too far to the right. But for the most part, in most states, they have highly sophisticated screening and assessment processes, tons of trainings and protocols, and they're incentivized to keep families together, to screen out cases, prevent cases from happening. And for those cases that do happen, they are incentivized to not take custody. It is a failure of our system if they have to take custody, you know, unless there's some extraordinary urgent need. But our system currently is designed to keep families together and prevent them from having too much contact. So that's a success, but we still have a long way to go to really right-sizing our child protective services system.
Do you think it would be better if the shift, if there is a shift away from foster care as the solution to preventive measures as the solution?
Absolutely. I mean, what many families need, if you look at all the kids who enter foster care, a good amount of them come from families who were just driven to the brink. Most kids that enter foster care didn't enter because of extreme neglect or extreme abuse. They entered because their family dealt with some extreme issues for a long time. And if we can help identify those families and connect them with new resources that are family friendly, like parent coaching, wraparound services, better access to mental health for their children. If we can identify and connect families with those types of resources, then I think we're going to see a lot less kids eventually entering the foster care system.
Sure. You would think so. I would think so.
Yeah. And where there is funding, where there are pilots to do that, you typically see really good outcomes. One of the big challenges is government funding, for the most part, isn't really designed to fund those types of preventative activities.
Exactly. Why do you think that is? Why do you think the tendency is to go to a reactive solution?
The history of how Congress funds child welfare is ridiculous and filled with decades of drama. And it's almost worth not even looking into. I really think we need to start over and just remember that whether it's the federal government or the state government or a portion of both levels of government funding child welfare, we need to all come together and create a better arrangement, because most of our funding comes into play after kids are in custody. And that's just ridiculous. That's not fair to kids and families. Most of our funding should come into play to prevent kids and families from ever getting to the brink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just had an idea. If instead of social workers managing youth in foster care, if social workers were dispatched to visit families on a regular basis in crisis, right? They're identified as being in some kind of crisis situation. And then they can go and, like the medical field, right? You can have people go in and check in on somebody who has that need. And then they would have the knowledge to be able to provide support and advice and direct them to resources and so forth. Do you think that could be a feasible alternative?
Absolutely. I mean, if you talk with experts in the field and families and young people, they'll all probably agree that that's the kind of approach that our government should be prioritizing. And those types of services do exist. Those types of programs do exist, but they're limited and it's difficult to pay for them. Our government design system doesn't really fund them adequately or enough. And tons and tons and tons of families fall through the cracks and don't even know about those services or never even offered them. And then those kids end up in the foster care system.
Yeah, I would imagine that there are a lot of nonprofits out there trying to fill that gap, but it's delicate. It's delicate, and to be honest, sometimes maybe potentially dangerous, depending on the circumstances. So it's not an easy, it wouldn't be an easy solution to build and implement on a large scale.
Certainly not easy, but it's also not easy to manage, what is it, about 500,000 children in the foster care system nationwide.
That's true.
And that's also
which would be easier. You know, maybe
expensive.
It would be easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Oh, well, okay. I'm going to get back to your organization. I wanted to give you an opportunity, and we'll come back around because I wanted to talk a little bit more about what the foster care system can do to improve the outcomes for young people as they age out. But I know that you won an award specifically focused on measurement and impact. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to maybe speak to that, why your organization does what it does to measure what services you're providing, to measure the impact that it's having, and share a little bit about the results that you've seen.
Sure. We're really proud of our data-driven approach to running the Ohio Bridges Program for kids who age out of foster care. We track so many elements of our program performance that it enables us to really pinpoint all sorts of opportunities of how we can improve. Of all the statistics in Bridges, the one that we're probably proud of the most is that 100% of all youth served who remain in the program through their 21st birthday exit the program with stable housing. And if you think about all the kids, you know, roughly 1 in 4 nationwide who experience homelessness in the years around aging out, we've literally achieved a 100% success rate for young people who continue in the program through their 21st birthday, that they are exiting the program with stable housing, not in a cliff and experience homelessness.
That's amazing. Is that because of the network that you've built?
Honestly, I believe that outcome has been achieved because the program holistically has been designed well. And by the time a young person has been in the program for about 1.5 years, which is our average, and they turn 21, they have developed the skills, the knowledge, the resources needed to achieve stable housing. And this is planned for. You know, we transition kids out of the foster care system into Bridges, but then we also support the transition of young people out of Bridges so that they can take those next steps into independence.
Is it mostly apartment situations? Because it would be tough to buy a home.
Correct. Most of the young people, by the time they're 21, are living in some type of apartment type setting.
Okay, that's amazing. That is an amazing statistic. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. And really the only other statistic that we're extremely proud of too is based upon a survey that we conduct every year of all young people in the program, in the Bridges program. And one of the questions asks them, are you satisfied with how this program is serving you and supporting you? And we strive for 100%, but we're currently at 92%. And to think that over 9 out of 10 of all young people are satisfied with what we're doing, I can only imagine what the percent would be for, you know, youth in foster care and how they feel about the foster care system.
Oh, yeah.
Serving them and supporting them. So the fact that we've gotten a 92% shows that this state government collaboration with our organization, it's working and young people are very satisfied.
That's wonderful. I love that. And do you do a regular annual assessment of when you get this feedback, sitting down and considering continual improvement? Like, we've got this feedback every year. Let's analyze this and see how we can continue tweaking things. I imagine you do.
Yes, we do an annual survey to all young people in the program. And then we also have regional focus groups to really go into it with facilitators and young people that are in the program and were previously in the program.
That's wonderful. Let me ask this question, because often when I'm talking about measurement with other organizations, and I think this is nonprofits in general, not just the ones who work with this particular population. But one of the challenges to being able to conduct a really thorough measurement program is time. Because everybody's so focused on the programs and services that measurement kind of falls to the back burner. So how do you make that a priority in your organization? How do you continually reinforce that to make sure it's happening?
Great question. We have just decided as an organization that all the programs that we administer have to be data-driven, because this is an expectation for service providers, for foster care agencies, children's mental health agencies, for them to collect data and be data-driven. So it should be one for us too. So across all of our programs, from conferences that we administer to the respite program that I mentioned and Bridges, we track an enormous amount of data, and we have a continuous quality improvement program where we have annual goals. We track our progress throughout the year. We identify new interventions and test how well they are moving the needle or not. I mean, we feel accountable to be data-driven, and then if we're not, that then we're not doing our job. We can't just guess and assume that we're making progress. We have to measure it and report out our findings, report out our performance annually, which we do and make available on our website.
That's excellent. I think making it ingrained, a systemic part of what it is that you do, is so important, because otherwise it's not going to happen. It has to be reinforced regularly as part of the expectations.
Yeah, it has to be built in. That's just how we work. That's just how we administer programs.
And how important is research to the work that you do? I don't mean you doing research, but utilizing research that comes out of universities like the University of Chicago, Chapin Hall, and University of Pennsylvania, the centers that are doing research on foster care. How important is that?
It's incredibly important, and there's not nearly enough of that research happening. I mean, the fact that you mentioned University of Chicago is probably because they're one of the few universities with more than one study released on this particular topic. But their work is phenomenal, and it was a contributory factor for Ohio to extend foster care in the first place. We actually invited the principal researcher of the Midwest Evaluation Study.
Oh, yes.
Dr. Mark Courtney to Ohio, and he gave a speech in our legislative, the state capitol, and was able to meet with state lawmakers. And he really made the case, and his research really made the case, that Ohio needed to extend support to young people, because not only did they deserve it, but it is cost effective to taxpayers, which is something that enabled this to be a bipartisan issue.
Yeah. Got to speak their language.
Yeah.
What's the money impact? Mm-hmm. So that Midwest study you mentioned, that was a while ago, was it not?
It was a while ago, and I think there was a follow-up study, and there's been some additional state-specific studies that utilize similar research methods.
But on the national level, I haven't seen anything come out like that for years.
Correct. On the national level, the federal government does collect some data of youth who age out of foster care, called the National Youth in Transition Database, or NIDID. And it's somewhat helpful. It's not very comprehensive, and it's only a sample in every state. We're really interested in conducting a more formal evaluation of Bridges and what makes it successful. But I'm really hopeful that there's more attention, more prioritization of research about independent living for foster youth, so that states and community-based organizations can replicate and really understand what drives best practices.
Yeah, best practices is a term that's tough, because you need the research foundation that's analyzing the application of strategies, right? And seeing what the impact is. So I encourage anyone who has a nonprofit out there to partner with a local organization, university, and see if you can't set up an assessment of one of your programs. We need more data.
Yeah, and funders from state governments to community foundations. It would be wonderful if they also made this a priority of what they're interested in funding.
So maybe that can be one of the next things we talk about. I know we only have a few minutes left, but thinking about how foster care, the system, quote unquote, can improve the outcomes for young people aging out of foster care, I think providing more funding, more grants for this kind of research could be an excellent start.
Absolutely. Especially funding and grants that are focused on innovation and solving the challenges in our system and filling gaps and doing new research. We're really interested in that. Just one quick plug is we're starting a new program this month called Fostering Futures.
Oh.
And this program is funded by two community foundations in Columbus and a well-known restaurant chain. And the whole purpose of the program is to create a workforce pipeline for youth who age out of foster care in the culinary arts, like restaurant industry.
Oh, I love it.
So we think that there are many really cool ideas out there just waiting to be funded. And there's community-based organizations in every state that are aligned to do this kind of work. And there's really no funding to do it unless it's cultivated through foundations or government grants.
Well, that's an exciting new program. I love that.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it and hoping that this pilot year is successful and to extend it to other parts of Ohio.
I would love to find out how it went, say, in a year, and talk about the rollout and how everything is going at that point.
I would love to have that conversation a year from now.
I'm making a note right now. I've been interviewing a lot of organizations that have workforce training programs, a lot around the trades, right? And I think culinary arts is a trade. And I just also interviewed one that they have a training workforce training program around automotive repair, a lot of the electrical part of it too, the computer side. So it's not just traditional auto repair that we think of. I'm older. Mm-hmm. So from what I think of. And there's just a lot of great programs out there. And so if there could be more funding for those types of programs, workforce, we need workforce, we need housing, we need education, scholarships, wellness, all of that. There's so many areas that need to overlap and lock in place for these young people to be successful.
Yeah. And more funding for research will show that investment in all those areas you mentioned is actually cost effective for taxpayers.
Agreed. Agreed. So what else do you think the foster care system could do to improve the outcomes for young people?
Yeah, I think it is important to consider changes to the federal financing structure for extended foster care. There's actually a bill pending in Congress right now that would give states more flexibility. And we are working with our state to see really where those flexibilities are, where we can, you know, shift our program and still be compliant with federal law. But in short, the way that extended foster care works is in order for a state to have the federal government chip in about half the cost, they have to show that all the young people are working or in school. And that makes a whole lot of sense. But if you really have to collect this level of acceptable documentation on a monthly basis, and if you're unable to, or if it's in question, young people may have to be terminated from the program until they can show more acceptable documentation, it just becomes a cyclical nightmare that's not fair to young people. So creating more efficient, flexible ways for states to accept federal funding to administer extended foster care is really necessary if we want young people to buy in and actually benefit and produce better outcomes.
Yes. I know there are a lot of young people who have the opportunity to take advantage of extended foster care, but as we've talked about, they don't. They just want out, just tired. They're done with it. And so they don't take advantage of it. Is there anything the foster care system can do, do you think, to maximize participation?
Yeah, I really think that there's a two-part strategy. One is design a program that doesn't feel at all like foster care, that is authentically different and really focused on youth empowerment and is individualized, you know, meets youth where they are. And then two, let's not create a process where youth have to go through 3 months of paperwork just to get into a program. It should be some natural next step out of aging out that they don't have to worry about homelessness for 3 months or figuring out a short-term plan before they can finally get into this other program. We need to make that transition seamless for them because they deserve that.
I just wonder if host homes could be utilized more and in a more formal way so that when a young person leaves foster care, and if some come from group homes, we'll say foster parents, that they could move into a room in a host home. And, you know, maybe there's some rent that they could get some help with through some programming, but eventually the idea is that they could, as part of, you know, learning the transition to adulthood and everything you need to learn how to do, paying rent is one of them, is have a, you know, a very significantly reduced rent for a room in a host home as that transitional living environment. Well, I'm sure there would be many different types, but I'm just thinking out loud.
Yeah, I agree that it's a huge opportunity. And one of the things that's really motivating and inspiring is finding out about all these churches that have developed this open table concept.
Oh, yes. Where
they'll recruit foster youth or alumni of foster care, and they will surround them with love and kindness and support and resources and mm-hmm. are committed to them for the long term. So I think how we think of host homes and kinship and wraparound, there's a lot of new ways that our system is starting to do that we should really embrace.
Yes. The Open Table, for those who don't know, they're an organization and they have a model, an open table model. And they began, I think, by supporting people who were homeless through churches. And they've also expanded their services to supporting young people aging out of foster care, basically people in need, right? So you bring people from the community together on a regular basis to support this person. And there may be tables like this, you know, outside of their organization, but they have a proven model if anybody's interested. So wonderful. Okay, these are some fantastic ideas. I always feel like after these conversations that we've got so many great ideas, but I don't know how to get them to the right people. You know, we're not set up as an advocacy group. So I need an advocacy group out there to listen to all of our podcasts and gather all the great ideas that the guests bring up and then start pushing those. So I appreciate your ideas, Mark, for sure.
Great.
All right. I think we're probably at the end of our time. So I'm going to have to say that we have to close. But thank you so much, Mark, for participating in this conversation. I have enjoyed it immensely. And I'm very excited about the work you're doing there in Ohio, right next door to us in Pennsylvania.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you're very welcome. Okay. For those of you who have listened to this podcast to the very end, thank you very much. We have a podcast put out every couple of weeks or so on average. You can find our podcast on our website, agingoutinstitute.org. Just look for the podcast link in the menu and you'll see we have 5 years of podcasts. You go look through all of those. You'll also find information on our awards program, which is coming up here in the summer. And we also have an online community for organizations and individuals who support youth aging out of foster care. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.